Hi, I'm Sally Hughes and this is the return of Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I find out how my guests feel about their own appearance. What kind of relationship do they have with their own face and body? What are their go-to products? Are they obsessive about their appearance or is it low on their list of priorities? And how have time and experience changed the way they feel about the way they look? So, deep breath. Margot Robbie, Charlize Theron, Miley Cyrus, Elizabeth Olsen, Priyanka Chopra, Björk, Brittany, Kirsten Dunst, Angelina Jolie, Liv Tyler, Jennifer Connelly, Naomi Watts, Natalie Portman, Dakota Johnson. All beautiful women, made even more so by today's guest, Patty Dubroff. Patty is, without question, one of the world's leading fashion, editorial and campaign makeup artists, with a specific reputation for flawless, elegant but modern red carpet looks. Her long and respected career was kicked off by assisting Bobby Brown and Francois Nars, but her talent and calm nature meant she quickly rose to prominence in her own right. She's one of the few pre-internet artists to successfully make the leap to a social media audience, boasting over 300,000 followers on Instagram. Only partly thanks to what must easily be 2023's most viral beauty moment, Sofia Richie's wedding, for which Patty designed the entire makeup look. Quote, "I always dreamed of Patty Dubroff doing my makeup on my wedding day," unquote, she told the media. So you can squarely blame today's guest for the current impossibility of finding a nude sticks blush in sun-kissed pink. Luckily, we do have her, albeit remotely. But before that, a massive thank you to our wonderful series sponsor, Skin & Me. Skin & Me is your most accessible, fast track to simplified skincare, offering powerful active ingredients in formulations you can't buy on the high street. Skin & Me can create a treatment for your specific skin concerns, tailored to you by experts. Whether you want to target adult acne, pigmentation, melasma, rosacea, or skin aging, this is powerful, personalized skincare that truly works. As someone who has used Skin & Me for years, I can honestly say I wouldn't go without it. Later in this series, I'm delighted to say we'll be joined by one of Skin & Me's very own dermatologists to answer any and all of your pressing skincare questions. Now, on to today's episode of Beyond the Bathroom. Patty, welcome.
Hi, Sally. Oh my God, it's so nice to be here. I'm really honored that you wanted to add me to the list of the incredible women that you've spoken to.
Of course I wanted to add you. I'm thrilled that you're here. We've had kind of big deal makeup artists on before, and I've interviewed most of them, yourself included, before today. Lots and lots and lots of them say, well, I just fell into beauty. Something happened. I met someone and I ended up doing beauty. I ended up doing makeup. It was all a big accident. And one of the things I really love about you is there was no accident, right? You were absolutely obsessed. Get me out of school. Give me a brush. Let's go. Tell me about that.
I'm going to start this by telling a story of something that happened just recently, just a couple weeks ago. In the midst of all of the Barbiness of it all, I had a moment where I remembered being a little girl, having one of those Barbie heads that were the kind that you could like paint on. So it came with like cheapy little crayon things that would adhere to the plasticness of her and you could style her hair. I mean, of course I had all the other Barbies as well, but like she was like the one I could like do the thing to. And I had a memory of that. And it all clicked that I was like doing real life Barbie. And there I was being a child sitting in front of Barbie, plaid head, thinking, I want to do this when I grow up. And it clicked that I was like, here I am, manifested that. I'm back with Barbie. It took that for me to like really like grip that like we have the ability to like create our future space in ways. I'm not saying it always happens, but magic is possible. And I feel like that was a magical moment that all came back around.
I mean, that's a huge, huge moment for anybody listening. I mean, surely, unless you've been living under a rock, you will be aware that the Barbie movie came out this year, the biggest PR and marketing campaign I've ever seen for a film ever. And it starred one of Patty's most regular and most beloved clients, Margot Robbie. So you start off putting the kind of the makeup that comes in the Barbie box on the Barbie's face. And you end up making up actual Barbie for the Barbie press tour.
For the Barbie press tour, that literally touched the whole world. And that's the thing that that really kind of exploded it wide open into the heart space for me and brought it all together. Because, and this realization happened before I saw the movie. But then when I saw the movie, you know, I really cried because there was that mother-daughter thing that is just, it all felt very, very profound for me. And back to the Barbie press tour, really the pink, the color pink touched the world and opened up the space of heart, space, joy, love. And you could feel that everywhere. Everywhere that we went and to promote the film, it was like people were wide open with their heart wide open, embracing, wearing the pink and elevating the spirit of that joy and that love. And being conscious of it was really cool. You know what I mean? Like just in yeah. the kind of color energy thing of it all, the tapping in, the intention of like bringing joy. And, you know, joy balanced with, you know, again, back to the kind of the message of the movie, back to joy balanced with, you know, a kind of grounded reality in the real world and what that means, especially to be a woman.
Right. So you mentioned the mother and daughter dynamic in the film. And I just find time and time again, a woman's relationship with beauty products, with makeup, her relationship with her mother is super influential for better or for worse there. Can you tell me a little bit about your mother and your earliest memories of beauty in that way?
Well, I remember sitting in front of my mother's makeup mirror and she had like a few nice things, like some drugstore things, but like a few nice things, like department store things. And I remember her taking space and using it, but it was more like it became my magical space because my mother, God bless her, she was a troubled person. So like, I can't like emulate her in all the ways. So, but what I do like emulate is that, well, what I do remember is that I sat in front of that space and I was able to transform myself. And then I was able to like transform whoever came into the space with me. And they would leave feeling like more happy. And I would feel happy because I made them happy. And that was like the start of it. Like anyone who would come in that space and I could use the things on. And then it grew to like, I got my own things. I would shoplift things from the drugstore. Oh my God, that's a memory that's come back. I'm like, I'm sorry. to all the CoverGirl and Maybelline and L'Oreal that I pickpocketed because I was desperate for some makeup. It was a place to dream. And that was a beautiful thing, really beautiful thing. And then it was a place that I like, you know, felt the confidence to start like touching other people and then bringing people in and like friends and family members and all the school plays and all the, you know, school events, dances, whatever. I was the girl who was getting everyone ready. And I always realized that that space of getting ready was more fun than the thing that we went to. Always inevitably, you know, and then I started doing like focusing in high school on business classes so that I could like have some kind of a business mind because I knew I wanted to like skip college and go right into working. Beauty school was something I thought about, but I was just like, I was just raring to go to get working. So as soon as I graduated high school, I moved to New York City and I got like the first job spraying perfume for a minute and I got a headache and I'm like, no, I want the makeup counter. And I was also waitressing and dancing on bars. And like, that's a whole thing. Margot Robbie, actually, she gave me an award for a Marie Claire award thing. And she brought up the story in the room about me telling her about how I used to dance on the bar at, you know, a women's night. And that's how I, you know, took care of paying my rent, all in trying to make it as a makeup artist. So as a makeup artist, I got a job at Bergdorf Goodman. And then that was a little bit of security. Then I got a job freelancing at the MTV studios. And that was really a fun happening place because it was like the beginnings, really the early days of MTV. It was the late 80s. And VJs were like Will Smith and you know, you know, I remember some of the other guys' names, but that's where I met Cindy Crawford because of MTV, because I was younger for MTV. And then I started assisting doing shows. And there was the House of Style thing that I would get to do Cindy for, which was super fun. And then I started really assisting. And you mentioned two people that I assisted, Bobby was one of the very first. And Francois was my main teacher. But I also had the opportunity to assist Kevin Kwan and Mary Greenwell a lot. Had a lot of fun with Mary. You know Mary, right?
I know Mary very well and have done most of my adult life.
Yeah, I love her so much. And Linda Cantello and Stefan Murray, I assisted them. And I was like part of Linda's team because we were at the same agency. And I was lucky enough to assist Stefan. I'm such a fan. Like Peter Lindbergh images still for me touch my soul in a really deep way. And that makeup that he would do for those Peter images, I mean, I just fangirled so much over like, and that he like let me into his team, you know, as like Francois's person, you know, it was amazing that I got to meet and work under so many incredible artists and understand individual technique, you know, and then really honing in on my own through that.
Yeah, Stefan Murray, lots of really brilliant makeup artists, I think, would say he was their ultimate makeup artist. Yeah.
But Francois too. Yeah. I mean, my God, Francois, to watch Francois paint a face was literally magic. Like amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What an incredible. Yeah. And I was with Francois when he was also in the beginning throes of developing his line. So that was really interesting to see that like very early process in how he was lining up benchmarks, thinking of categories. So it kind of like showed me like a different, you know, way of looking at your kit kind of thing. One time he showed up and his kit had been emptied out, and literally he showed up and the box contained a concealer. And I think it was a test, actually, a concealer, an eye pencil, a lip balm, like a, you know, or like an 8-hour cream, a brown brow pencil, a concealer, and a balm, literally basta. And it was like, do the face with that. It was, I remember.
Yeah, that sounds like a test.
It was amazing. It really taught me everything.
We'll be back with Patty in a minute. First, time to thank Skin and Me, Beyond the Bathroom's wonderful series sponsor. Whether you're dealing with hyperpigmentation, adult acne, rosacea, or skin aging, Skin and Me really drives results, no matter how much or how little makeup you wear. Your personalized solution can even out skin texture and smooth wrinkles. Most people see results in 90 days. Skin and Me is powerful, personalized skincare you won't find on the high street, delivered directly to your door. All formulations are made to order and evolve as each skincare journey progresses. You receive a tailor-made product, ongoing expert advice, and one-to-one support for only £24.99 per month. And because Skin and Me products are effective, you don't need a complicated routine with countless products. A stripped-back regime saves money and maximizes your results. No filters, just Skin and Me. Try your first month of personalized treatment from Skin and Me for $4.99. Just visit skinandme.com and use the code SallyandMe to get started. As a human being and as an artist, what were you looking for? Are you looking for the expression on your model? And I use the word model not in a professional sense, strictly, just the face you're painting. Are you looking for them to turn around and catch a glimpse of themselves and for you to see that you've made them feel good? Is that the moment? Is it an artistic endeavor? What is it that turns you on so much about this job?
It's the first, I mean, for sure. I mean, since I was a little girl, seeing that person look in the mirror and kind of get that little bit of a, like, it's like you could see almost like a little bit of a leap, like a heart open leap, because they, through their eyes, are connecting to their beauty. So they like elevate a little bit. And then when you think about like, you can really help elevate someone's spirit, you know, through the whole thing and putting together the package to then present to whatever their world space is that they're going to. But it's like a little bit can do a lot in that kind of like connection to feeling a little bit more, you feel a little bit more powerful, a little more grounded, a little bit more put together, obviously, a little more polished, and just a lot more kind of ready. And I love that. I love when someone has that feeling. It makes me so happy. It's why I do it. And so doing it for any environment, whether it's a wedding or it's a big red carpet, or it's my friend who wants to learn how to do her makeup, or is going to a thing, or my daughter's friend who's going to her prom, literally. Like, I want to see them like, oh, like that thing, that heart lift. I love it so much.
Can you remember the first time you felt that thing, that you looked at yourself in the mirror and thought, I feel great?
I don't remember the first time. I guess the first times were through other people's lenses, not my own. Because I, like, when I think of myself, I was like a really chubby kid, like kind of really bad teeth that I, you know, whatever. I felt very misfitty and I felt very dumpy. They used to call me Fat Pat or Fatty Patty, you know, so like right there, it was like, it's deep. It's like Fatty Patty. So now, like, oh my God, I'm going to start crying right now because like I'm in a like zoftic time in my life with menopause. And I'm like, I'm in that fuller body. And like, I hear those voices and it's like, stop, you know, the whole, you know, weight issue stuff around beauty. But then even though I was, you know, I'm shorter and I was fuller, I would do crazy things to get thin. I would be like a raw foodist yogi, you know, and I looked
as a child,
I was a young adult in my 20s, raw food, yogi, really fit. There's been times I've been wildly fit, but then I have a body that like is more kind of wants to be fuller.
As a little girl no little girl should have to be hearing the way she looks described back at her negatively.
Oh, totally.
Hearing those words, Fatty Patty, I mean, that just goes through me. It's such a kind of cruel thing. It must have made you feel like shit.
It was bad. I mean, it was really bad. I always knew that I was gonna get out. And I was gonna get out of there and whatever there was. So maybe that was like, you know, the negativity of the space and the whatever, the circumstances, that I was gonna get out and that I was gonna end up in Hollywood. And then my friends, my really good friends through high school would call me Hollywood. That was my nickname. And it was funny because I was never like, I'm gonna be an actress. I mean, I did have one acting job that kind of opened the door to a certain aspect of my life, but I was never that like, I'm gonna be an actress. I was like, you know, focused on makeup, but they would call me Hollywood.
So even if you didn't know that you were gorgeous for a while, was there a moment when you realized, damn, I'm good though. I'm good at this.
Yes. Absolutely.
When was that?
No, I think it came together when I realized that even though I had all this body issues growing up in my early 20s, again, as I was about to say, through other people's lenses, I was like working with photographers because I was wanting to do makeup and then they'd want to photograph me. And then seeing those images, I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, actually, that's okay. And then that's okay. And that's really okay. You know, and I look at those pictures now and I'm like, oh my God, can't believe how beautiful I was, you know, and it was really beautiful. It was a beautiful time. And I came to acknowledge my beauty through those, you know, again, those images, that lens. And then coming into my own as a makeup artist, I mean, I think I've always had a confidence as a makeup artist. It's not in a like really, you know, like, I mean, of course I'd get nervous and whatever, but because I've really been doing it for so long, I feel this ease with it, you know, and of course circumstances can be like intense when you meet Jane Fonda for the first time. That's a little intimidating. I can be nervous.
Well,
you know, you're nervous.
Having interviewed Jane Fonda myself, yes, it's kind of intimidating.
Very intimidating. That said, I think I'm really in my most confident stage right now, this time in my life. You caught me. Right here, right now. This is it.
I love that. You seem to, I always think with your work, although it's obviously beautiful, I always think that there's something that comes through with your work that always looks like you have quite a strong bond with your subject. Like it always seems very collaborative to me, like there's a relationship between you and the face, that there's a history behind it. You seem, I know you're incredibly loyal to your clients and, you know, you talk so warmly of Margot and all your regular clients, but it seems to be a very collaborative process to me, which really makes sense when you say that the thing you're looking for is them to feel amazing, is for them to show you how great you've made them feel.
I guess I ask a lot of questions, you know, like I ask a lot of questions before I am putting my stamp on things. Like, because I want to understand what it is they want to walk out feeling like. And then, of course, if we're doing the photo shoot, it's all the collaboration of the whole team, what the objectives are. But I love that part of the process where it's the question time, the discovery period. And even when it's comes to like doing, teaching my friend how to do their makeup, asking them like, are you really going to do this? How do you feel? You know, like, show me things. Like, I'm pulling out of them. Trying, like, so it's a psychology. I think that that's what it comes down to. And I think that that's super fascinating, is the psychology around perceived image and beauty. So I guess in that way, yeah, I'm on a exploratory mission to understand, even like if it's someone I know, like, you know, what do we want tonight? What do we want tonight versus what did we do yesterday morning, whatever.
Yeah, it's a different feeling, isn't it? Like, how do you want to feel on any given day can change dramatically, right?
I don't want to put a slap on someone that's my slap on that someone.
Yeah.
And that when people look at it, they're like, oh, she did that thing. She did her thing. She did the thing. I'm like, I don't care about that so much. I mean, I'm of course going to want to work with people who are on the same track as me in terms of like the finish of the skin. You know, I don't like a lot of, I'm not good at hard lines, so I'm not going to do hard lines. Go to someone else. I'm not good at a lot of doing a lot. I can do Lashify. I'm not good at doing a lot of like false lashes and all that. Please do someone else. It's like, and I will, I have in many instances, people that I've always been like interested to meet, I've said no to jobs because I'm like, that person's going to want, they're going to want to be sculpted and they're going to want a full lash. And they're probably going to want a liner, and I'm not going to do it well. And I think someone else is going to do it much better. But damn, I'd love to meet them someday if I could do my thing.
Yeah. What I also find fascinating is that, and I spoke to Bobbi Brown. Bobbi Brown was a guest on this podcast in the last series.
I listened to hers.
Oh,
yeah,
you did?
I did. And I, my God, I respect her so much. And at certain times, I felt like I was listening to myself in the future, because the wisdom of Bobbi is, I guess it's like something like you, it's like on a pedestal to be achieved. And oh my God, just, she's so beautiful. The things she said were so grounded and practical and smart and kind. Yeah. She's all the things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love Bobbi. I love Bobbi.
And our Marcia connection to all of us.
Yeah. We all know them all, right?
Yeah.
What I asked Bobbi then, and I suppose I'm asking you now, is that you two have in common this idea of being little and being told you weren't pretty enough or thin enough or good enough or whatever.
Yeah.
And yet you make this decision to spend your life surrounded by freakishly beautiful people. Mm-hmm. Like, Margot Robbie is not a pretty girl. Margot Robbie is like a raging beauty, right?
Yeah, but she's like also a normal human. She's a normal human who has really great bone structure, but has all the things. Like, it's just not, I think that's, again, why I love the Barbie movie, because we put these people on a pedestal. And then when you look around, they also have cellulite or, you know, the things that we're trying to also divert attention from. And I'm not like pointing at Margot specifically, but it's just like,
it
breaks my heart when people are people, human beings, any human being, any movie star, any model, any, you know, cause I started with models. I was around those freakishly and I was around supermodels. And that was a thing, you know, back in that early day. And that's where I had to build my confidence. I was like, I was around like the most famous women for being beautiful all the time. And those were my circle.
So tell me about that, because I think Bobbi said at the time, it's weird, Bobbi, like me, tiny, small person and surrounded by these models as you were. And me too, my whole career, I've been around incredibly beautiful people. And you say that's where you had to build your confidence. What was that process like? Was there ever a moment where you thought, geez, I don't want to be in this environment every day?
Yeah. Well, no, I think what it was is what I realized is like, they needed my skill. They needed my skill. So their their beauty depended, their perceived beauty, again, by the scrutiny of the outside. Because like when we were inside, in the hotel rooms or like traveling or just being girlfriends, yeah, of course, they're like, they're normal. They're not wearing any makeup. They don't care. They're like, oh, they're blah.
Yeah.
But then their perceived beauty needed to be enhanced by a someone like me and a someone like, you know, whoever, hair, whatever, the whole team. So I felt in a way not like beneath them, but in equal to them. And I think that, again, back to the thing I was saying about Barbie and any movie star, is that they are put on this pedestal, just like those supermodels. And that's not the real thing. The real thing is like the human that we all face in our like lives when we're, you know, sitting in our pajamas. It's like that's, and you know, like not feeling, you know, our most glamorous self. So it has to be put on. So it's a process. And I want women to understand that it's like you make a choice to step through that process. And, you know, you can do little versions of it, you know, and it's all incremental, of course, depending on, you know, how glam or how public your perception is. But the most important is when you look in the mirror, no matter whether you've been glammed or whether you're just in your normal life, that when you look in the mirror, you find acceptance. That's so huge. I think that's the thing that I'm growing into, is like, I don't need to like look my most polished self to like look in the mirror and be like, I'm okay. I'm great. I'm so good.
So makeup or none, when do you feel great? What makes you feel great?
When I'm not worrying about my appearance is when I feel great. How's that?
Yeah.
When I'm like in the moment, not worrying about my appearance, not obsessing, when I'm not obsessing what other people think, when I'm like fully like in my thing, doing my thing, happy, grounded in my feet, you know, what in whatever thing, whether I'm cooking or cleaning or typing or conversing or sharing tea or whatever, if I'm not worrying about what that other person's thinking of me or what the screen's thinking of me, then I'm like, I feel beautiful. I feel good.
And has that state become easier or more frequent to achieve as you've become older?
Oh, absolutely.
And if so, why do you think that is?
It's become easier because I feel more grounded in myself and like confident in like, you know, I'm confident in like, I am who I am and this is who I am fully. I want to be who I am fully. It may be controversial with some, it may turn some off. It may, you know, feel too esoteric for some. It may feel whatever, whatever. I don't care. This is who I am and I feel comfortable and I don't feel like I'm wrapped in anxiety because I'm in this like worrying stage about how I'm being perceived. And that's where I think that people get so, you know, the thing about beauty becomes so kind of mental, literally mental.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want, like, you know, and I know when I put in effort, I can turn it up. I can look like a movie star too. I may not be one, but I too can look like one because I know how the tricks to making one look like a movie star. So sure. Do I want to walk around in that persona? No. Do I want to spend all the time it takes to put that girl together? No. I want to be lighting incense. I want to be doing yoga. I want to be like acknowledging like kind of other things in life.
I wonder whether the experience of having had brain surgery few years ago expedited that kind of journey that you've been on of deciding what matters, what actually makes you happy. Tell me about that and whether that contributed to that kind of journey to self-acceptance for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's very much like a story related to my kind of beauty through because of the surgery. But in terms of, and yes, absolutely, in terms of kind of spiritual groundedness, I'd say, or connectedness, it turned up the notch. But I'm someone who's been on a spiritual path since I was a little girl, always seeking, looking for someone to bring me to some church, show me something. And I was very lucky to find a spiritual path in my early 20s that really resonates with me still. And it's just the brain surgery thing really kind of like, it really turned it up a notch in like the kind of realization of our limited time, you know, the humanness and like needing to like really feel that connection and it not just be some idea. And then with the brain surgery, I wasn't able to dye my hair for, I was a very dark brunette. For those that don't know me before, I had brain surgery. I had like really dark brunette hair, long brunette hair, bangs most often, and gray hair coming in the front. And the surgery was, the scar of the surgery was going to mean that I wouldn't be able to dye my hair for like 3 to 4 months after, which means I would have had like pretty substantial roots. And mm-hmm. that would have made me feel even more like shit. Then, you know, mm-hmm. the shit I was already, am I allowed to swear on your podcast? Oops.
Yes, please. Live your truth on the podcast.
So outside of my family, the only person I told was Chris McMillan. And I asked him, like, what do I do? Like, I'd have to do this thing. I'm going to have these great roots. Like, I'm going to help. What am I going to do? I trusted him, his opinion.
So Chris McMillan, for anybody mm-hmm. listening, Chris McMillan is a very important, influential hairstylist of Jennifer Aniston fame.
Yeah.
And so you spoke to
incredibly
him.
Kind and connected and grounded. And he's an amazing person. So I asked him, what should mm-hmm. I do? And he said, let's chop it off and dye it blonde. And then this way, when the gray comes in, you're kind of on your way to like letting like, you know, the gray be like a gray blonde. It'll be yeah. on your way to like letting the gray take over. So mm-hmm. that was pretty dramatic. Actually, the brain surgeon didn't tell him that I was doing that. So when I came in, he came to the room the morning of the surgery and I had like blonde hair. He remembered a brunette from his consult a few months prior. And he was a bit kind of taken back and confused and like making sure I was the right girl. But yeah, so I did that thing. And I gotta say, the vision, and then my friend Servando, who's also an amazing hairdresser in LA, he had this vision for me with long gray hair. And he saw it. He kept seeing, he's like, grow it out, long gray hair, long gray hair. So I started making it go from like blonder to like cooler, really feeding into the gray in the front. Having my hair in the back is still quite dark. So we add like, you know, kind of highlights or foil things to get it toned yeah. a little bit, but I don't mind all the dimension, but I'm primarily gray in the front. So kind of really leaning into that, and I've let it grow long again. And so I feel like my youthful self because I have my long hair, but I forget that it's gray. I still feel like I'm like the young brunette that looks like my daughter, you know, kind of thing.
I almost can't imagine you anymore with the different hair, which is always a good sign, right? When you can't imagine, so it like becomes their beauty trademark. I think of you with the long gray hair and it just seems so completely right for your personality and your aesthetic.
I guess also social media. It's the social media persona, right?
And so you wake up, so you had, there was an aneurysm, right?
There was an aneurysm.
As much as you feel comfortable discussing it, tell me about that process for you personally, going through such major and scary surgery, right? Someone in your head is scary.
Yeah. I gave birth at home. The only time you did too. I love that.
Yeah, both times.
Oh, I love that so much. Yeah. And I never wanted to medicalize it. And as a baby, I was hospitalized a lot because I was very premature. And I think I was in an incubator for like 6 or 8 weeks or something like that. But then as a young child and a young adult and as an adult, I never hospitalized. I never really, thank God, touch wood, didn't need to like have any kind of medical intervention. Thank God. So the aneurysm, the way it was found out, which is an absolute angel on my shoulder blessing. I had a thing in my mouth. And it needed to be looked at. And so the dental surgeon sent me to a throat and mouth surgeon who specializes in like cancers, throat and mouth. And that was very scary. So they did a biopsy and they did a scan. And the biopsy came back benign. So that was great news. But when he was delivering that information, he told me that the radiologist detected a cerebral aneurysm in my brain while looking at the thing in my mouth on the left side, saw a cerebral aneurysm in my brain on the right side. Thank God for that radiologist.
So they just picked it up by
accident. They picked it up. It was an incidental finding. Mm-hmm. Because without that incidental finding, I would have you know, just had this aneurysm, which literally, for lack of a better way of describing it, it's a ticking time bomb. It's really scary. And they're extremely more prevalent than people know. And so it was detected. And then I met a bunch of brain surgeons. And then the one that really, like, you know, I felt comfortable with was in New York. So I did the surgery in New York. And it was my daughter's first day of high school, a new high school. She had been at the same school for like all of, you know, the early years and early junior high. And so she was starting a new school and I was having brain surgery in New York that day. And my husband was with me to help take care of me. And she was staying with our kind of Los Angeles family, her godparents. And they were making sure she got to school. Yeah, that was really intense.
That's a lot.
But and so, yeah, being wheeled into that space, what I remember is literally telling myself, this is the time all of, you know, all of the practices you've done are for this now. So go there. And I literally, I let myself kind of, I closed my eyes. I went into like a really deep meditative state as they got me like on the table. I don't know if it was in conjunction with getting like the, whatever the medicine was to knock me out, or I feel like it was a little bit prior. I feel like I knocked myself out before I knocked out before I had to even kind of really kind of understand what was happening. And when I woke up, you know, I saw my husband's face and I, you know, like I felt light and I was thirsty and that was that. And then I recovered. I got out of the hospital pretty quick. And, you know, it was really, I felt safe. I felt very protected, you know, in the whole thing.
You did.
And I felt like I was able to really kind of like self-calm through breathing, focused mantra repetition. You know, it was a meditation. It was like what it was there for.
Is your spirituality something you always turn to during difficult, scary times? Has it been a constant for you? You mentioned since your 20s.
Since my 20s, it's been like more learned, or like, you know, like I've kind of learned how to develop practices. Before that, it was just like very much seeking and finding, looking for, you know, seeking, very much seeking. But I really do, like, I'm often remembering being like a child alone in nature. So I do remember that. I've always done that. And now that I feel more kind of grounded in my kind of ability to explore that, it's been really wonderful.
One of the ironies about makeup artists is that whenever you ask makeup artists about their favorite products, they nearly always go in with skin, because makeup artists are more obsessed with skin than with makeup, right? Because you can do a lot regardless of product if you have the talent makeup wise. But skin, I know, is super important to you. How do you take care of yours?
Like, it's funny. I knew you were going to ask this. And then I was like, oh, and I'm going to draw a blank as soon as I'm asked about, you know, it's, I have a lot of products around, right? I get to try a lot of products. I'm not going to like, so I try a little bit of this. I try a little bit of that. Some things I become more drawn to and I'm like, oh, I really like that thing. I'm going to use more of that. And that's how I treat my products. It's like, I'm a little bit of a lab, like not a laboratory. I don't, you know, but I try things and then I weed things in and out, but I'm a little lazy. I have all these machines and devices, big, you know, like I could actually open a kind of facial salon. And I've thought of it, you know, like maybe that would be a nice thing to do, but I'm very lazy when it comes to doing them myself, because I'm like, again, the less time I have to spend like thinking about what I look like, the happier I am. Should I throw out some brands I'm obsessed with or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is BioEffect. It's a brand from Iceland and I love it so much. And Beauty Pie, Marcia, what a genius. I like, it's the stuff I use. She's just a genius. I mean, yeah,
she is.
She really is. And she really has a very elegant sense of smell, a sense of, you know, fragrance, and love what she puts out there. Who else am I using? Augustine Spotter, of course. I've been a longtime champion, and you know, it's kind of a standby. It's not like the thing I use like every single day, but I have it like, it's like in the rotation. IS Clinical, you know, IS Clinical. Mm-hmm. I use IS mm-hmm. Clinical. I like their things a lot. I like some Biologique Recherche, Environ, South African brand. I use a few things from them that I get from my facialist, my genius facialist Fabrizio friend. I'm thinking about the facialists and what they like share with me. It's like Melanie Grant, really, like it's Biologique. Oh, Melanie also turned me on to this new German brand that is very beautiful. It's called Autier. Have you seen it? Autier?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And this definitive density cream. Loving this. Very beautiful. Really like it.
It's a very beautiful bottle.
Yeah. Maybe I'm so obsessed with the bottle, but I really like the cream too. I mean, I'm a sucker for packaging. Aren't we all? Isn't that why
me
we
too.
Do this?
Yeah. I love packaging.
Yeah.
So you're all about moist, moist, dewy skin. You're not like a matte queen, are you?
Not a matte queen at all.
You like an alive looking skin.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I feel like I look back at things and I'm like, ooh, I could have gone, but it all depends on the light. I mean, here's the thing. The only time where something, I'm going to look back at something and be like, ooh, I wish I would have mattified it somehow a little bit more, is when there's hard direct sun. But in that case, if you do mattify it more or add more powder in that hard direct sun, you're going to see the product even more. So it's kind of this double-edged sword. Photographers in the fashion world, this is for anyone listening who, you know, looks at editorial photography, every photographer hates foundation and hates powder. You can get away with a little concealer, a little foundation, sometimes depending on the photographer, but do not show them powder. You will never get invited back.
And what makeup item makes you feel instantly good? Everyone has something, right? I know lots of people, for lots of people, it's mascara. For me, I always want cheek. Like I always want something on my cheek. What makes you feel instantly better?
I'm going to say foundation. Sneaky foundation. And brow. You know, brow, now that my brows are thinner or, you know, more sparse or whatever, that brow is important. But I feel like if I add like a quick wash of something on my skin, everything feels better. I can bite my lip a little bit. I can like, you know, I don't even really need the eye stuff.
Yeah, like a little tint of something.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could have said three products, because then like it would have, you know, I would have said the blush. I would have said the something to give my skin a wash, a tone, a blush.
Yeah.
And a pencil that I could use on my brow and put around my eye. But when I could use that pencil to line my lips too. And then if I had a little balm, sure, then I'm done.
Tell me what decisions you've made or attempts you've made as a mother of a daughter, having raised a woman, around her relationship with her face and body. Were there any conscious decisions you made when you had your own girl to raise?
It's so hard because it is so complex, because she grew up in Los Angeles. She also grew up with a mother who was taking care of other beautiful women and their appearance. So, you know, it's complicated, super complicated.
And it is complicated.
And, you know, with the pandemic really gave us an opportunity to talk about those things and to hash out some of those things and those feelings. I mean, I think the main thing for me is the role modeling around how I choose to present myself in terms of beauty. And I am very much wanting to give her an insider's view into the reality of what we talked about before, that these girls that I work with, and that she sometimes gets to meet them at their house, you know, or like more normal circumstances sometimes, you know, that they're just normal people too, and not to like the idolization, because I think that people that grow up without that insider view into the idolization of celebrity can really think that those people just naturally that are just have those bodies naturally or have those like all the things. So I wanted her to be really cognizant of like the smoke and mirrors of it, of the whole kind of celebrity culture, beauty industry, etc. But then, you know, in tandem with that, I would want to help her take care of her skin. And when it was challenged, especially when, like, hormonally was challenged, but she didn't like the spotlight on her and thought that it was like, you know, I was judging her. Instead, I'm trying to help her. But if I would point something out, it's just like, it's kind of my, you know, I notice because I'm skin obsessed, or, you know, I pay attention. It would give her a lot of insecurity. So it's, you know, she comes to me now for advice more now that she's 20. But when she was a teenager, yeah, I think it was very hard for her too, because she would, you know, think that I was kind of putting like a spotlight or a judgment or that kind of thing.
It's such a tricky balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that the reason people like you on social media is that you present as a girlfriend of theirs.
Oh, that's so, like, nice. Thank you.
Like a trustworthy girlfriend who happens to have this amazing talent and experience within the industry.
Oh, I think
you present as a real person. You mentioned earlier on in this conversation, I think you mentioned to me last time we spoke about the menopause, the absolutely life-changing process in for better and for worse that is. What kind of impact has it had on your life?
Oh, it's like, I feel like, I mean, I would hear people say this, and until you're in it, you don't really kind of, you can't really know it or believe it. But like, stepping into menopause, stepping into this time in my life, I have absolutely, I think I've said it like multiple times, never felt more grounded, connected, and absolutely sure of who I am. And in that way, also beautiful. I know that I look more beautiful because I am much more in who I am. I'm connected to, you know, I'm connected to myself, and in a really profound way. And that's, I think that's the ultimate goal of like a spiritual pursuit, is like, find the thing that makes you feel really connected, and you will then feel much more beautiful, you know, kind of at ease, no, less anxiety. I love that part of it, you know, like relieving anxiety just through connectedness, simple little practices, grounding, kind of relating yourself to where you're in, or where you are in the earth, simple things.
Yeah. Simplicity. I feel like as you get older, you realize that easiness and simplicity are two completely different things. And often the hardest thing to get to is simplicity.
It's an interesting thing about also about, you know, us as like career women and wanting to achieve a lot, is like, I noticed for me, there's been periods in my life where I've forgotten my spirituality, and I've forgotten a lot of that part of myself because I've been so focused on, you know, wanting to achieve this thing. And then I also realized that there's been other parts where I've had to like let go of the idea of the achieving of the thing. And when, specifically motherhood, and letting go to that like obsession with it. And then when that happens and connects, the thing that, you know, you really want just comes very easily. And when there's like a connection, you know, it's like, it's, I feel like there's a big lesson in remembering to be easy on yourself, to breathe easy, to like not let things feel so burdensome, to like let there be ease. And with ease comes flow. And with flow comes back to connectivity. But like, ease is the first thing. Like, if I'm feeling like I'm in an anxious state, I stop and I'm like, okay, where's all the weight? Is it in my chest? Is it in my shoulder? And I've come to realize that like, depending on where I'm feeling the weight depends on what's kind of being affected more, like where I'm feeling more upset or unsure, not grounded.
And so finally, Patty Dubroff, when you look in the mirror now, do you like who you are and what you see?
Sometimes I'm surprised by what looks back. Because as I said, I sometimes think of myself like I'm still like this like 20-something year old, you know, girl, like yeah, whatever. So sometimes I look and I'm like, oh, whoa. Oh, there, she's there now. So I think that that's a funny thing. And then there's other times where, again, depending on the lighting, I look in the mirror and I'm like, I am really beautiful. Like, wow. And then there's other times where I look in the mirror and I'm like, wow, those creases are really showing your deep kind of, you know, intense feelings. That looks a little scary. So it really depends. But it really, no matter what it is, what I catch when I look in the mirror, it is a important stop point and a check-in, and it's a check-in. So that's why I think there is an importance to mirrors, because they force people to have a moment to check in. People that live with a lot of mirrors, that's a thing. And you know, you can think about what that brings, that can bring up. And then there's people that live with no mirrors. They don't want to see it. And then what are they hiding from? So I like to have mirrors and I like to check in. And I notice different mirrors will show me kind of things sometimes. It's something really to think about. Mirrors are, there's a profoundness to mirrors. And I don't find it a coincidence that I work around so many mirrors, you know, and I contemplated them.
Well, I've absolutely loved having the opportunity to check in with the objectively, absolutely beautiful Patty Dubroff. So thrilling to speak to you, Patty. And thank you also for listening. If you've enjoyed today's show, please do rate and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Patty, thank you so much. And I will see or hear all of you all in the next episode when I'll have another guest. Thanks. Bye.
Insanity Group.